the way that they took over the team. It was pretty ham-handed and very sort of 90s, right?
Yes.
Like, but they couldn't do anything about like this mass of people who was skeptical of how this took place and vocal about it. And that sort of moved into being the real narrative. It's so clearly apparent that Hinckley was wrongfully usurped of power and did a fantastic job. So when he had that press conference and he said, I feel like everyone's waiting to criticize like a move that I make. What GM says that, dude? What GM comes out and says, oh, everyone's just waiting to criticize me? Like, yo, that's a really insecure, anxious person who's totally scared. He's scared to do something. What GM is like worried about the public criticism of his moves?
My guest today, Max Rappaport. He is, you know who Max Rappaport is, but go ahead, introduce yourself. Thanks for coming on. I'm really excited to have you on talking Philadelphia 76ers. And I mean, our Philly episodes, every time I talk about the 76ers, it gets like twice as many listens as any other episode. And partially, I feel like it's my passion for the topic, and partially it's because it's a fascinating team. And I think that, you know, this probably, at least in my mind, is going to blow the other episodes out of the water. So thanks again. You know, do your plugs, and then we'll get the show on the road.
And what an introduction. I don't think anyone's ever needs no introduction to me for an introduction, but that was good.
Really? I could have said like one of the worst sports writers in America.
That's how I've been introduced sometimes.
That's how you introduce yourself on Twitter.
Yeah, I earned that title from Deadspin last year. It was a big honor to end 2016 for me.
Yeah, no, I mean that's only semi sarcastic, right? Because I would have been really excited about that.
No, it was actually, I was pretty excited that I ended up on there. I ended up on there for a feature I did on basically process fans. I went to a game in March that Spike Eskin and Mike Levin from Price to Ricky Sanchez, their podcast.
I'm going to have to bleep this, that out. I'm
sorry.
I'm just going to go ahead.
They did a Price to Ricky Sanchez / process night at the Sixers in March. And this is before Sam Hinckley was gone. This is probably like 3 weeks before he resigned or was forced out. And it was just this crazy, you know, like 350 fans there in the upper level. And this is before, I feel like this is before Embiid started using process and sort of co-opting that for all fans. And now I feel like trust the process has become a mantra that like even people who didn't trust the process are now using because they associate with Embiid. But it was just like, I basically did a feature on these crazy, you know, fans who've stuck with it. This is when they had like 6 wins last year in March, or 7 wins, and fans were chanting trust the process. They were chanting analytics. They were chanting Hinckley's name, like Brooklyn style, like Hinckley from the upper deck. It was pretty wild. But yeah, they named that one of the worst columns or worst feature stories of 2016. So that was awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. You don't hear like analytics and like nearly as much anymore. And I suppose that's got to be bittersweet because you have real players to chant their names instead of.
Hey, Hollis Thompson was a real player the whole time. No, you disparage his name like that.
Is he? You say that
he's not in the NBA right now.
But yeah, right.
He should be.
Like, I just don't think that's funny, Max. That makes me really sad. I mean, you use that to transition into the longest period of time that I personally am going to talk. I'm starting off on a bad foot, but can you just bear with me for a little bit?
That sounds good.
Okay. All right. So I wrote an article, and it started out like, imagine a scene for me. You're a 38-year-old dad recently divorced from your estranged ex-wife who has custody Monday through Friday, leaving your weekends with your only son, Jason.
Man, this
a couple
is really,
weeks ago.
This is bringing me down. I thought I was coming on to talk about basketball. This is like really depressing.
Well, this is where the journey begins, man. Like, come on. You didn't really think this was all about basketball, right?
I guess I knew.
It has to start like sad, and then it builds and it crescendos, and then we get to, you know, the torn meniscus, and oh, wait.
If we get to talk about the Sixers, the feel-good story of 2017.
Oh my God. All right. Leaving your weekends with your only son, Jason. A couple weeks ago, I mentioned to you that he has recently decided to play for his middle school basketball team. You, a lifelong basketball fan, are incredibly excited at this potential because you and your only son can now bond over your hometown team, the Philadelphia 76ers. Your roommate, Barry, gives you a couple of tickets. You offer him a $20 bill, but he grimly declines you. You later realize this is because no one wants 76ers tickets. You hop in your 2005 Toyota Camry, donning an Allen Iverson jersey that has gotten a bit tight on you since you've been alone. You've put on a solid 15 pounds. It's noticeable. Your son is wearing his new Joel Embiid jersey you gave him and is later visibly upset by the fact that Embiid never actually makes it to the court. You feel awful, but it gets worse. You arrive to the arena, and it is a ghost town. You find your seats, sit down, and proceed to witness the most laughable and horrifying NBA game you've ever witnessed. No one speaks on the ride back to your one-bed, one-bathroom apartment. Jason sleeps on the couch. He leaves the next day. He never mentions basketball to you ever again. You can tell he thinks your ex-wife's new husband is a lot cooler than you are. You sob silently into your burnt toast dinner and go sleep on a mattress on your bedroom floor. And after hours of sleepless night, you are plagued by nightmares. You wake to the sound of your own screams. God damn it, Tony Roten. Make a fucking basket, please. I can't take it anymore.
That was amazing.
Thanks. I didn't trust the process at all. And as someone who started to trust the process, I got on board. I had a lot of conversations after Hinkie's resignation letter, and someone around late April of last year, converted me. But I feel like it's like, you know, bittersweet because, you know, I think it's cool, but like, I don't think I have a place at the table to be enthusiastic. So anyways, what are your like personal feelings about like people like me who were essentially haters and then just sort of but are just like, I was really wrong?
I think if you're willing to admit you're wrong, I think that's fine. I don't think that at this point, look, if the process people were going to be gatekeepers for Sixers fandom from here on out, as long as this team has pieces that Sam Hinkie put in place, then, you know, you're going to have the same 3,000 diehard fans who are here the whole time. They're going to be the only real Sixers fans in our minds. Like, I think that's unfair. But I think if you're going to jump back, especially if you were in the Philadelphia area and around it and like knew, I think a lot of people outside the city didn't really know what was going on, which is like fair. Why would you pay attention to a team that's actively trying to lose? And, you know, other than Noel and Okafor didn't really, and MCW for the brief time that he was decent, didn't really have much to pay attention to. Embiid wasn't playing. They hadn't gotten that top pick they were trying to get, which they eventually got with Ben Simmons. So, like, I don't blame anyone outside of Philadelphia for not really being on top of what was going on. I think, especially for, like I was saying, especially for people in Philly, but really for anyone, if you want to jump back and say, like, oh, well, it worked, I think not like an admission of being wrong so much as, hey, that thing they were doing for a few years worked. What I've seen a lot of, and this is mainly from like older cranky columnists in Philly who, you know, shat on the process. Sorry, am I allowed to curse on this, by the way?
Yeah. All right, no, cool. I can bleep it. Come on, Max. Sponsors.
who dumped on the process for 3 years to now be like, oh, well, somehow oh, it's good now without any explanation of how that happened or that it's mainly Joel Embiid and Dario Saric and whatever, or just a complete fabrication of why it's better, which is like, well, Brian Colangelo changed the culture and brought in veterans, and that's why they have 21 wins, ignoring the fact that the 7'2" phenom who Sam Hinkie drafted 2 years ago, 3 years ago, who they all said was a bust after he missed his first year and got injured again, that he is the reason for that. So I think at least having like some honesty about why the team has turned things around and honesty about the process, you know, you could have been wrong about it we don't even know if you were wrong about it, honestly. Like, I don't think we're at a point yet where we know the process has worked, but I think a recognition of what the process has resulted in, which is at least a shot at being pretty good.
Well, so I mean, the key part of the timeline there, right, is that I changed my mind in late April, which you know, is debatably the low point of the process, right?
That's an interesting time, yeah.
Well, because like I started talking about it a lot, and I eventually reached this critical mass of conversations where I'm all with you, man. Like I'm like part of the I'm woke, you know. I buy that it's process over results. I just I had like a critical failure in my critical faculties, and like didn't think that the process made sense. I'm not so much like about, you know, the results necessarily. I just didn't think that it made a lot of sense, like as an idea.
Was it that you thought that it just like the way the lottery works, it just doesn't give you enough of an incentive to be bad to get the high pick, or that even if you get a high pick, the guarantee is so low? Like, was it just it's not worth it sort of thing, or did you think it? You know, you look at teams that have picked really high in the lottery in the last 10 years, and a lot of them haven't gotten out of that. Is that kind of what your equation was?
Yeah, it was a lot of things. A big part of it is that I honestly think I'll always wonder whether Jahlil Okafor was a fatality of the process, or whether he just was a fatality of being born 10 years later than he should have been if he wanted to be really good at basketball. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I thought pretty much all of last year, and continue to think that it's quite likely that, you know, given a smaller offensive load, you know, before his knee injuries, you know, on offense, he wouldn't have to create everything in such limited space. And the fact that he could, I mean, get 20 points on any given game at will would be more like 22, 23 in like an open floor with like actual offensive threats around him. And posting up people is really hard. Like it drains your energy, and like rookies are not conditioned to post people up in the modern NBA for 36 minutes a game. So you go on the defensive end and you're like a rookie who is not a professional athlete yet and is not professionally conditioned. And of course your defense is going to be worst in the league. I think this is possible. It's plausible that he's just bad. I think it's maybe more likely that he's just bad. But that's sort of an example of like, okay, well, even if you build it, and even if they do come, maybe just nothing comes of it because, you know, the basketball doesn't get inflated unless you're pumping. I don't know, man. Does that make sense?
Sort of. I mean, I guess you transition to Okafor, I guess, is your point just that, like, I mean, if you want to break it down, like, the Sixers tanked for a full year that season, 2014-15, and ended up with Jahlil Okafor. Is that kind of your point, that, like, that can happen and it's just not worth it?
My point, I guess my point is, like, I think that superstar talent doesn't necessarily actualize, and that, you know, the pot that you have simmering has like just as much to do with like how good the stew is than like what type of meat you put in it.
This is like the Kawhi Leonard argument. That like is
it's a little like bit like
if Kawhi
that, yeah.
Leonard went to the Hawks or the, you know, the Grizzlies or something, would he be Kawhi Leonard?
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think Jahlil Okafor is a really good example. It's part of why, while I understand why he doesn't have a lot of value, and I don't want him on the Sixers in the future because I just think the fit's really bad. I could see him going to a better situation and actually probably never being worthy of the third overall pick in that draft, especially with Porzingis being Porzingis. But I could see him having a much better career somewhere else. I do think we kind of underrate how much it matters where players start their careers and the situations are put in early on and how that affects the trajectory. I think for Okafor, this is about as bad as it could be in terms of fit.
Yeah, I just feel like it's I want to, maybe just because of like my personal worldview outside of basketball and like maybe like my political beliefs, I want to believe that it essentially is you know, you look at any individual basketball player in the NBA and they're going to realize the fullest extent of their potential. And I don't like the idea that, I don't like the idea that Greg Popovich is anything more than a footnote, unless Kawhi wants him to be more, in Kawhi's Hall of Fame speech. Does that make sense? I really don't like the idea of, like, Kawhi wouldn't be anything without Greg Popovich. Yeah. I just think that, like, realistically, ignoring, like, the value of that, to me, is probably myopic. And then, like, taking another step, if you bring it to its fullest extreme, which is, like, the process, like, we're essentially not trying to win. Like, if like, competition in of itself, or this, like, winning environment, or doing things the right way, right? If that's a real thing, and you could put it on, like, a gradient slider and move it from the left to the right, it's all the way to the left, it's at zero. And, like, I was thinking, like, this could be catastrophic, and, I mean, you guys did get, like, 10 wins one season, right? It's just, in the end, I think that what happened with Embiid that that, again, like, I think was just, like, a failure on my part to like, realize something fundamental. Embiid is sort of like DeMarcus Cousins without, like, emotional issues. I mean, DeMarcus Cousins, his talent and the fact that he's, like, a top 10 player in the NBA has nothing to do with the Sacramento Kings. And it's just, he's just profoundly talented. And I would probably claim the same thing about Joel Embiid and the 76ers. So it's like, then at that point, it's like, well, I mean, sure, the Spurs were amazing for 20 years and Popovich was a big part of that, but just drafting Tim Duncan was the other key ingredient.
Yeah. Well, I think you're totally right. I think there is, I mean, look at Nerlens Noel, look at MCW, look at Jahlil Okafor. I mean, the fact of the matter is, for those players, I do think their careers were hindered in a way. I think it kind of cuts both ways, especially with, like, a guy like MCW. I think if he had gone somewhere else, it's not like I think he would have turned things around and had this great career, but I think it's also possible that he wouldn't have flashed the way he did early in his career. But I think you're right that the situation in Philadelphia was not conducive to player development. I mean, it was for lesser players, but not for the, like, high profile guys they were drafting at the top of the draft. I think it was so circumstantial, though, you know.
And I feel like it was a bit of a bell curve, right? Where it's like it helped lower end players, and then actual NBA players, it wasn't so helpful for. And then guys like Embiid, it's just like, here's your sandbox, like, go play.
Well, yeah, I think the problem with the process really was the timeline just got jacked up so much by Embiid's injury. And, well, one, I guess the first part of it was just where they ended up in the lottery until this past year, picking third two times in a row, which happens. I mean, that's, like, part of the equation. But the fact that happened, and that Embiid, in the first guy you drafted out of tanking, like, because, you know, the Noel MCW draft was coming off the Bynum year under a different regime. They were trying to win that year and just didn't because Bynum didn't play. And we're picking 11th and then traded Holiday for the sixth pick to get Noel. That first year with Hinkie and Brown, where they tanked and were supposed to be in the Wiggins, Parker, Embiid hunt, they ended up with the third pick, and Embiid breaks his foot a week before the draft and they end up with Embiid. Now, I think if Embiid stays healthy, I think they'll actually, that might be one of the luckier things that could have possibly happened, even though I think Andrew Wiggins is a really great player and was probably going to drop to three that year. If Embiid's healthy, I think he's the best player in that class. And I don't think it's that close. But missing him for 2 years, it totally jacked up the entire thing. I mean, and then you bring in Okafor, and I think even if Okafor had been a better player, he wasn't a transcendent kind of talent. Where you can really, the Sixers were waiting until they got their Joel Embiid or their Ben Simmons, or at least you hope Ben Simmons, before taking the next steps and adding guys like Jared Bayless and Ilyasova and, like, actually trying to win. And you see it now. I mean, the Sixers have 21 wins and are probably going to, if nothing changes, they'll probably pick around, like, 5, 6, 7. They couldn't have afforded to do that before they had Ben Simmons or Embiid. Like, if that had happened 2 years ago and Embiid, you know, was still hurt, and let's say he never played again, or, you know, was kind of came back and got hurt and whatever, then what do you have? It's like, you got Noel, you got maybe MCW if you didn't trade him, You've got Embiid, who's now like his career is whatever, and whoever he drafted at like 6-7 last year instead of Ben Simmons. So I think it was just, you would have hoped going into this that they had been able to secure that one guy, that Karl Towns, that Andrew Wiggins, that Embiid, if he weren't hurt earlier, and then been able to build up from that. But they just never got that guy. It just kept getting pushed off until finally they got Ben Simmons and Embiid came back. But I think it was just natural that if you were going to go all in on this rebuild, you can't like pull out of it too fast. And once they had Noel and Okafor and that was kind of it, they couldn't do it. It was just, they didn't have enough, or they didn't have that close, nobody's guaranteed, but that like guy you'd expect to be a franchise changing player. They didn't have that yet. So
yeah, it's like moving forward around like a Haas, Turner, and Thaddeus Young core, you know, like exactly. They're good players.
And that was the whole point of doing it, was getting out of that.
Right, exactly, yeah. So I mean, and that makes a lot of sense to me. And I think that, again, like the timeline of all of this stuff, and we talked about this about even before recording, I mean, everything's so foggy, but at the same time, it's just so critical because it is important that, you know, I sort of changed my mind about like the realistic, or I guess I changed my mind and decided that Hinkie wasn't just outsmarting himself, because it's never that I thought he was dumb, because I feel like the only person who calls Hinkie actually stupid is probably stupid, but I mean misguided, you can make an argument for. And for me, it does seem really interesting that it's like, well, yeah, now this whole thing is validating itself. But I mean, Embiid, putting aside injury, and I realize that you can't put aside injury, and hopefully we probably talk about this next. Putting aside injury, what is he the most talented player drafted in the last like 10 years, 20, since Shaq?
You're asking me?
I mean, it's semi-rhetorical.
I put him in that, I think, honestly, I put him in that category of Anthony Davis, KD, LeBron. Like, you know, I know it sounds crazy to say, but I just think it's true in terms of talent, not, you know,
yeah,
necessarily what his career will definitely be. But if he's healthy, I mean, look at what he was doing this year on limited minutes.
And you get one of those, like, what, every 8 years, probably? Yeah.
And that's what the whole thing was about. And I think Ben Simmons might not be that exactly, but he's also a guy who I think is, you know,
man, I think he is
a really good player.
I talked a lot about this. One of the more fun episodes, like from a self-indulgent, like Bacchanalian, like perspective. This year for me was talking with Jonathan Charks about like the future Philly pick and roll where. It's going to be Covington and corners, and then the example we used was so imagine like if you were the Portland Trailblazers, and this was we were talking before they traded Plumlee, and it's like you have Plumlee and Aminu, so you're trying to decide how to respond to a pick and roll where the pick is being set by Joel Embiid, and then coming off of that pick is Ben Simmons, and in each corner you have the modern day equivalents of Ray Allen and Shane Battier, and then you have like whoever. You could have like a Labrador Retriever point guard. At this point, it doesn't matter. Like, what do you do if you're Plumlee? Like, you crap your pants. There's nothing to do. You're going to get roasted. Like a 4-5 pick and roll, there's no way that a big is going to be able to deal with like Simmons like guard skills, basically. Yeah. Or I mean, just like the obliteration of the I guess the combination of touch, the Shaq-like combination of touch and size of Embiid. There's just nothing to do about it. I think that people are going to realize very quickly once that pick and roll gets going that it's going to be. You remember like back in the 90s when there was just nothing to do when you were. Like really utilizing the 1-2 punch of Kobe Shaq.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be like, it conceptually is better than that. So unless something goes wrong, it should be better.
You're getting me real excited here.
well, I mean, you should be. I fully believe this. Right. And to me, it's like interesting looking back at the timeline and, Jahlil Okafor, who, man, we have so much to talk about, but
yeah.
You know, if Jahlil Okafor hadn't been the guy, and if you know, there are rumors, there are certain suspect ideas that perhaps Hinkie didn't want Jahlil. He didn't want Jahlil. So if he had gotten his way, or if, you know, he didn't want Jahlil and also he wanted Kristaps, then maybe you can have a similar conversation about, well, could Kristaps and Embiid run a similar pick and roll? Mm-hmm. Which I think is like the future of the league, essentially, right? Is pick and pop 4-5s, I think, is like the most devastating thing possible. But unless it was Kristaps and Embiid, I think that, like, it's the best possible reality to be Simmons and Embiid, right?
I actually, in a way, think Simmons and Embiid is better because of what you said about 4-5 pick and roll. I think Ben Simmons is basically a point guard, a good point guard playing the four with his size. And I think,
yeah, I agree,
with Embiid's ability to float out, like, I don't know. I think I did a poll like 5 months ago or something. It was before Simmons got hurt. It was right after Summer League. I said, would you rather have Simmons and Embiid or Kristaps and Embiid? And I think it was pretty split, which says a lot about Simmons, because at that point, Kristaps is coming off a really nice year. I think I'd go Simmons, honestly. And I know that's biased because the Sixers have Simmons. They don't have Kristaps Porzingis, but I think that's really nice.
I would too. Yeah, and I mean, like, part of that, I think you're onto something there. At this point, when we say, well, Simmons is like basically a point guard, I think Kristaps is, you know, he can clearly shoot. He's pretty much always going to be a better shooter than Simmons, but Simmons, I think, as far as I can tell, is a preternatural passer, and I don't see a lot of stuff in Summer League that makes me excited, but I was watching Simmons really closely, like in Utah and Vegas, and basically trying to watch the same thing that Steve Kerr, when he was working for Suns management, was watching with Steph Curry when he was at Davidson, which is, how bad are his teammates? Like, how many times how many assists should this guy have? Mm-hmm. And every single one of Simmons' passes were on point. And then
He made Rashawn Holmes look really good.
Right.
He made Rashawn Holmes look like, yeah, you know, Joel Embiid, basically.
And this was before Sas Castillo, like, even sort of had his act together. Mm-hmm. And he was just hitting guys in corner, and his decision making, and I think his height is LeBron style, insofar as the being able to make decisions so fast that you could probably make decisions as the role man in a short pick and roll, which is just stupid at that point. Like, that's just rude. It's just mean. You shouldn't be able to do that to another human being.
It's
are you there?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I thought you were gonna, I was waiting for you to keep going.
No. I was just saying, like it's the idea. I honestly don't think that, like, I've ever seen anyone, maybe Lamar Odom a little bit, who can distribute as consistently in the third of a second that you have to make the right decision, like, from the free throw line to the basket, off of a catch, because, like, that's what I think is super deadly about, yeah, LeBron James, like, as he gets close to the basket, is because everyone else in the NBA will have made their decision to either score or pass during that, like, part of their landing, or a part of their, like, takeoff, right? But I think that Simmons, and I think that LeBron, and that's what's so exciting to me, can make decisions so fast and are, like, so dynamic in that, like, quarter of a second that you have to make a decision, that's just a threat that I don't think that Kristaps could ever have next to Embiid.
Yeah. And I honestly think Simmons, this is the one skill he might have. You know, a lot of people have compared him to LeBron. I think his passing at this stage, if you compare him to where LeBron was at age 20, I think it might be better than that. And it's the one thing. I think LeBron's better at literally everything else. But I think Simmons' passing is closer to what you saw from LeBron like a few years into his career.
As someone who wears glasses, I know that glasses can really change the way that you look and feel. With a huge selection of over 2,500 styles, GlassesUSA.com is the best way to get your best look, and that's 100% guaranteed. When you purchase eyeglasses online with GlassesUSA.com, you have an even wider range of choices than if you go to an eyeglasses shop. The pair of glasses I'm actually wearing in my logo, the Cedric Black pair, you can look them up on GlassesUSA.com. You can actually try them on. They have a virtual mirror that lets you try on glasses. You know, once you make an account, you can import a picture of yourself from Facebook or from your computer. It was as easy as buying glasses could be. If you wear glasses and you want to support the network, what you need to do is go use the promo code Almighty at checkout. Not only do you support the Almighty Baller Podcast Network and my podcast, Almighty Ball and NBA Show, you get 55% off of your first purchase at GlassesUSA.com. So again, that promo code is Almighty, A-L-M-I-G-H-T-Y. My GlassesUSA.com glasses are actually the best pair of glasses I own. And Victoria, I wear GlassesUSA.com glasses all the time, right? I have other pairs, but I choose to use these ones, right? I'm not sure if you heard that, but... yeah, how handsome am I? She says extremely handsome, so definitely go check them out. Don't forget to use that promo code at checkout, Almighty, to get 55% off your first purchase at GlassesUSA.com. Yeah, that's an interesting idea. I think that I think that maybe if you were playing 2K, you would put LeBron's passing IQ higher, and then like his touch, passing touch or whatever, like lower than Simmons. I think Simmons like has the passing equivalent of English to like a startling degree. Right now as like a 20-year-old. And I think that that's something that LeBron had not refined to this point, but now he's like talking about hitting Kyle Korver, like laces up and getting it in Channing Frye's shooting pocket and stuff like that. And I think that that's something that Simmons, and this is sort of what I was talking about in Summer League. This is something that Simmons has done since he was 14, but I don't think he'll ever be like, I don't think you'll ever understand basketball the way that LeBron does.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell.
No, I know what you're saying. But, yeah, it's exciting stuff. And I think, you know, I guess wrapping this back around to the process, people say this a lot. People who trust the process, I think, say this a lot. But I actually had fun. I was going to say the last few years sucked, but honestly, it was kind of fun being a fan of this, being like a diehard fan of a team that was doing something so interesting. It at least made rebuilding like an interesting story, and were doing it the most dramatic way a team had ever done it. I appreciated that part of it rather than just being like the Magic or one of these teams that are bad, but like just kind of, but I think if you look at, if what we're talking about happens, Ben Simmons comes back and is the type of player you think he's going to be. And I mean, Embiid's knee injury now is not a huge concern, but like that he continues to not really have any major injuries moving forward and just progresses as you'd imagine. Like the 3 years they were rebuilding before this year that they were tanking are going to feel like the shortest amount of time. Like that the team was like dreadful for 3 years and then came out of it with two potentially like franchise altering players and maybe another one with, you know, you look at where they might be picking in this draft with the King swap.
TJ McConnell. Oh, wait.
And with the Lakers pick. And TJ McConnell, of course. no, but I mean, even if you ignore like Šarić and the Kings pick they have in 2019 unprotected and the Lakers pick they have this year, top three protected, and their own pick with, you know, King swap. Like, even if you ignore all that, if they just come out of this, these 3 years with Ben Simmons and Embiid and they're both healthy, it's like, who cares about those 3 years? I mean, I sat through... since the year I was born in 1989, my first year, before I even turned one, the Sixers won 50-plus games. They went 53-29. One other time in my entire lifetime had the Sixers won 50 games. It was in 2001. I was 12 years old. So, you know, and for most of those years, they've been in the mid-30s, 34, 35, 36 wins. Like, the fact that they won 19, 18, and 10 wins the last 3 years, like, that didn't feel that different from winning 27, 35, and 40, you know? Like, those seasons don't feel that different to me.
And in a sense, like, it's actually not that different. Like, the difference between 27 and 10, like, I mean, you're the number one as opposed to the number three seed. And I think outside of optics, that's the only thing that matters. Mm-hmm. That might be an interesting transition into the differences between the two regimes.
Or the lack of differences, I guess.
Man. Okay, so... do you want to go from there? Because, like,
yeah, sure.
I really like waxing poetic about the 76ers because, like, I'm a little bit jealous. I'm from Dallas. I'm not going to, like, see something like that with the 76ers. And I say jealous with the understanding that, like, I just watched a championship and, like, I it's not like jealous in terms of, oh, I have it worse, but jealous in terms of, like, you know, you still have something cool. Like those, I think there's a Taco Bell commercial where it's like order envy. Do you know what I'm talking
about? I haven't seen it, but you're basically saying like Mark Cuban's not going to do what the Sixers, you're never going to get to experience the process. Is that what you mean?
Well, yeah. And like, you know, like I wear square rim glasses and I'm a pseudo intellectual. And this is what I really like about sports. Like, I would like to think that, you know, instead of being like like the jock who goes in and like kicks over the D&D board and is like, you know, you guys suck, like nerds suck, jocks rule. I'm like going into like the basketball courtroom and like deflating all of their basketballs and throwing calculators at their heads and saying like, I know basketball better than you do. You know what I'm talking about? And like to that extent, I really enjoy the process and talking about it.
Yeah, I think the Sixers have had one of the, for a team that's so bad, they've been one of the more interesting teams in the league since they traded for Bynum 5 years ago. Like, I think it's been an interesting ride, but usually bad up until recently, but, and a lot of disappointment, even beyond wins and losses. I mean, I think that I didn't look at those as really disappointing because it was what was expected, but, you know, with where they fell in the lottery, with Embiid's injuries, with Simmons getting hurt before this year, even Noel and Okafor having more injury trouble than you expected. Like, it's been rough, but, and certainly Bynum was probably the roughest of them all. But they've been interesting at least. They're not, you know, I know I'd rather have this than be, I said them before, but the Orlando Magic are always the team I think of that are just like, you know, you kind of know what you're getting and it's not much. And they're not really putting themselves in the position to get themselves out of it anytime soon, unless something really breaks their way and they, you know, get a steal towards the end of the lottery or middle of the lottery. Like, that's where the Sixers had been. And I hated it. It was terrible. So,
well, and I think that, I understand the argument that, you know, the grit and grind era Memphis Grizzlies have been really fun and that you want to keep something like what the Atlanta Hawks had the last couple of years. You want to keep that alive despite the fact that it's not on track to win the championship. Like, I get that. And I think that to a certain type of fan, specifically the type of fans that you're literally desperate to just get to go to a fucking game, that's cool. But I mean, I think that if you're a certain caliber of basketball fan, you want more than that. And it's not nearly as satisfying as like really going for it. I think that, like, you know, the whole like Icarus aspect of, you know, really going for it is, I mean, certainly dramatic, right? It's like a Greek myth or something like that. But
yeah. Here's what I'll say about the Grizzlies, though. It's like, I think people have used that. I wouldn't say that coming out of this at this point, knowing they haven't beaten Simmons, I'd be happy if they ended up being the Grizzlies. But it's like the Grizzlies won 50 games 3 years in a row. Like the Sixers, that's the thing, is it's like, I understand why the Grizzlies or Hawks wouldn't want to blow it up. And the Hawks, I guess, are sort of in a weird spot where they might be doing that. But, you know, I understand not wanting to blow it up if you're a team like that. That's not going to win a championship, but you're good. Or maybe like the Clippers few years ago were that, but like the Sixers have never been that. Like, I've never experienced that. The Sixers,
they've never been one player away.
Yeah, they've never been. And you convince yourself when I was a Sixers fan in 2007 or 2008, I convinced myself that, like, oh, they got Elton Brand. If he can just turn it around and, like, you know, come back from that Achilles injury, like, you know, then that's what you do. Or Andrew Bynum, when they got him, and you're like, well, Drew Holiday was an all-star last year. And, you know, if Andrew Bynum can step up, and that's coming off his best year as a pro, like, step up and be like a real, you know, all NBA guy. Like, and then you delude yourself into thinking that you have a shot when you don't. But I mean, the teams you mentioned are even further along than the Sixers have ever been. Like, you know, the Grizzlies, theoretically, I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but theoretically they are one big player away, or one, like, you know.
Well, I think they were. I think they're probably expired at that point. Fair. At this point, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, like point taken though. Like, I mean, the, you know, if it is different to me, and I've made this argument like a lot. I think that if you are one player, if you're legitimately one player away, then you're where you want to be, because like you're either literally winning a championship, or you're a player away like everyone else who's contending for it, or, you know, you're not a real contender. And that is, you know, cynical, and maybe it's like minimizing the fun that you could have by just like going and watching your team. But I mean, I guess my problem is that like basketball doesn't make me sad. Like when my team loses, like that doesn't really bother me. But when they win, it makes me really happy, and I want like that to be to be fully actualized. But hey, I have a really interesting question that I have been mulling over. And it's less about like X's and O's and more about this idea that I've had.
Yeah.
And I had this conversation, a while back with another one of the hosts on the network, because, I was taking the cynical side. So it's been impressive to me thus far that I think in large part because of who Joel Embiid is and the fact that he calls himself the process, that there's this like, there's this voice in Sixers media right now that preserves like the whole Hinkie process thing. Like Spike and Bodner will always get into the, and I'm really happy for him that subscription thing worked out. But, the like rights to Ricky Sanchez type thing, like that flies right now, and that's like a real voice. But here's my thinking: when the 76ers get as good as we're saying that they might be, as in like Miami Heat 2012 Heat Index good, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's the amount of media hype, because Philadelphia is the fourth largest metropolitan area in the United States. And I think that this is a real possibility. When everyone wants access to the 76ers and to Bead and to TJ McConnell and to Dario and to Simmons, and everyone wants to be in that locker room, but you basically either have to be a titan in the Sixers, I guess, sports like media place, like just saying like, hey, I'm from Liberty Ballers might not cut it. And the Colangelos are the type of people who I think would use that. And again, the Putin metaphor is interesting here. They could use it like Putin used the oil and like turn it off and turn it back on depending on who they're happy with. And you can either like, you know, get access into the locker room and be given media privileges and be, you know, taken seriously and get to like publish interviews with like, you know, Joel Embiid, superstar of like the 70 win Philadelphia 76ers, or you can not buy into that and just get shut out. Like, how worried are you about that possibility?
I mean, I would say that it's not that far off from that point right now. I mean, not to go into like a lot of detail about the Sixers credentialing process, but they're pretty tight with them as it is. And there isn't a lot of access, and you can kind of see like even with traditional media, there's just not a lot of just not a lot of information flow. You know, it's I think that's one of the biggest failings probably of the new ownership group that took over in 2011, right after the lockout ended. You know, the team ever since then has just been very secretive, very as much as they've tried to do some things publicly to, you know, reach out to the fans, I feel like there hasn't been, you know, they've been very Spursian, I guess, in that way, or like similar to the way the Patriots run things. And I think it rubs people the wrong way because they haven't at all.
But without that, the success.
Yeah, without any of the success. So you might say they're, I don't think they're as bad as the Knicks are in that regard, but they're on that plane where the Knicks are with the way they, you know, treat PR and credentialing and whatever.
So, I mean, my concern is like, now I have to edit this. So my concern is, there's a place in the media environment for Woj, and for Woj bombs, and like for someone to, I mean, basically, you know, if you listen to a Woj podcast, like what you're listening to is like an hour of someone of like a 50 year old man from Brooklyn just like blowing someone. there's a place for that, and like I appreciate that he's someone who exists, but if everyone was Woj and everyone was towing a party line to curry favors, that would suck.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I actually think the fact that the Sixers haven't been, you know, in terms of credentialing online with the blogs that cover the team and podcasts and whatever, the fact that they haven't done that, I think, has emboldened those outlets to be more critical, because there's not, you know, if you're not being offered access in the first place, what are you risking by speaking your mind? And I think that's the situation a lot of Sixers non-traditional media finds itself in, and honestly, I probably almost prefer it that way in a way, even though the Sixers have credentialed me for some things, mostly with my work with Complex Sports. You know, I think it's kind of healthy to have that, to have at least some aspect of team media not be as entrenched and as servile to the team because of the access they're getting.
Well, and that. Hopefully the differences in the media right now in Philadelphia, and the fact that there are, you can sort of pick out like a few of the like SB Nation like fan sided, like I think Liberty Ballers like a bigger deal than like just being a Philly like SB Nation site. And you can say a similar thing about Blazers Edge, and a similar thing about Pounding the Rock. Like there are like five or six like entities in like the blogging community in sports markets like Philly. But like the reason why I use the Miami Heat example is because everyone, if LeBron like farted on the way to the team bus, like people wanted to know about that, right? Like, yeah. Like anything that LeBron said, like what people wanted to read was just like an article that like said whatever LeBron said, however inane that it might have been, and like break it down all the way. And so like I can't think of anything that would be like sort of the blogging equivalent of coverage that the Miami Heat used to get, because everyone wanted like everyone was like sort of starstruck, right? There's so much to be had from a media perspective by like trying to be paparazzi, like just like get the inside like scoop or whatever, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I feel like the 76ers with Simmons and Embiid, there's so much potential for that to be replicated. And that's sort of, I'm a little bit concerned about like the possibility that, I mean, like, I just can't think of anything similar to that from the 2012 Heat era. Like, you know, it's the only stuff that people read from Miami at that point, or about the Heat at that point, were national media coverage and people who were getting quotes from like inside, like the LeBron Whisperer. I just talked to him the other day.
Oh, Windhorst, you're talking about?
Oh yeah. Like Brian Windhorst. Like when was the last time, like, did you ever read, like a blog post, like, about the Heat? That's what I'm worried about, I guess.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I don't know if it'll get to that point. I mean, even look at, I guess I compare their situation more to like where the Thunder were a few years back. And obviously it's different because Oklahoma City is the smallest market, I think, in the NBA. And like you said, the Sixers are a much larger market. Maybe it's more like, I don't know, the LeBron factor makes it so different.
Is there no Embiid factor? What if there's an Embiid factor?
There could be an Embiid factor. I do think Embiid has, maybe it's more similar. I was going to say the Lakers, but there's a Lakers factor too.
Is it the way that people are breaking down the whole Meek Mill thing? Like that is a little bit like LeBron coverage. It's like, we're talking about whether or not he should have been doing the stakey leg. Like, what are we doing at this point?
I've grown up with that because I think that's just how Philadelphia media is. And it's very much a traditional media thing. It's a sports talk radio thing. I think New York's probably the worst with that. But Philadelphia is very similar to that.
What about Boston?
Yeah. And Boston too. Although I feel like Boston's more positive about their own, they're like complete homers. Whereas Philadelphians are just like way too negative about their own players, and New Yorkers are even worse. But yeah, I hate that stuff. I mean, I just think I'd like to see less of that. And that's part of why I like the process was the coverage of the team you got.
Was so smart.
Was mostly smart coverage because the columnists in the city who cover, you know, four major sports plus college plus high school plus national stuff and, you know, have to pay just a little bit of attention to everything, weren't covering the Sixers. So you didn't get these hot takey pieces that you used to get or that now we're starting to see about the Sixers. Like, there's a lot more Sixers coverage, but the people who were like really on top of what's happening with the Sixers, it's not like there's more of those people. There's just more people who like are sort of paying attention to the Sixers and every once in a while will write a column about them. So I do think it dissolves the quality of the coverage a little bit, but I think you can still find it. 2017 is great because, you know, you can find good coverage if you want to. So I think the,
and hopefully the internet, like, yeah, hopefully like the internet and like the way that Twitter has sort of like optimized the content process, sort of, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but like, hopefully that's what happens, that you find the .blogspot posts that have like 1,000 retweets because like there's something there probably. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm hoping for because like I fear that the Colangelos have or are going to have when, like I said, I think that this Philly team is going to be 60-70 wins. And I'm right always. So, we might as well just say like they're going to be a 70-win team. So if we're like accepting this as a reality, then if you're a Colangelo, how do you respond to that? And I think that the answer is like, do you watch Game of Thrones? Like I feel like they're the Joffrey line. Like,
Somebody after the Simmons or the Embiid news, I guess like last week came out. Somebody went on Brian Colangelo's Wikipedia page and changed his middle name to Joffrey.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically it. Like, when Hinkie got fired, I do a bunch of design stuff. Oh, shout out. Is it Optional T-shirts?
It's we kind of need to change the name because I feel like people when they read it can never say it right. So it's Optionalities. And it's based off of Sam Hinkie saying that the team was giving itself optionality by doing the process.
Yeah, that was like the buzzword.
Yeah, for like a little while, and I feel like it's too far past now, where now people don't really they see the word optional and just think it's optional tease. But that was the idea.
Okay. Well, shout out. So you know what it's like to spend way too much time designing stuff. I made a similar thing with Scar and Mufasa and like Long Live the King and sort of flinging Mufasa down into the wildebeests and Colangelo. You know what I'm talking about right now? Can you imagine it in your head?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you saw it play out in real time. So, I just feel like, you know, I did a NBA history podcast for a while there. And like, you know, I I mean, like, even like dating back to like the Bucks and the Suns, like when the Colangelos were involved, like it took a special type of like ownership and management to be able to have, you know, in Men in Black, when you press that little thing and it like you forget, mm-hmm. It wipes your memory. Yeah. Like, I feel like that's essentially what the Colangelos did to everyone collectively about the fact that the real reason why the 76ers with D'Antoni and Steve Nash, like the real reason they never won a championship is because like the Suns wouldn't spend money.
Mm-hmm.
And they, I don't think were really well managed. And like, essentially no one criticized the Suns because no one could. You just would get swatted and that sucks. And I feel like there's a lot of variables at play in the given situation that could see it like suffocate out anyone who wasn't like Woj. Which again, I'm not even criticizing Woj because like I think that's like important to have, like insiders and like favors for favors. But I feel like real analysis is also important.
Yeah, and I do think coverage has gotten a little bit smarter. I think national coverage, it's kind of polarized. I think there's really smart national coverage that you can get that probably 10 years ago you couldn't have, in the Zach Lowe's and the, you know, stuff you read on The Ringer and more national guys who are, and even on TV, I feel like there are some smarter
Almighty
guys
Baller Podcast Network.
Almighty Ballers Podcast Network, really the big guns. But then you also, have your, you know, your Fox Sports 1 shows and whatever. Like, I think it's polarized more than it was before, but I think you can find smart coverage nationally at this point in a way that you maybe couldn't before, or as smart you couldn't find before. And then you were talking about winning 70 games and made me think of the Warriors. But I feel like the Warriors, as huge as they've been the last few years, they're still really good, from Warriors World and all the blogs there, I feel like have just been elevated because of the status of the Warriors. So my hope, I guess, is that with the Sixers, if and when they, you know, hit that upward trajectory, and not just because I write for Liberty Ballers, but things like Liberty Ballers, people like Derek Bodner, who just started.
Yeah, but what if Liberty Ballers continues to be pro Hinkie though?
But I don't even think it's really about Hinkie. I don't think that Liberty Ballers is necessarily. Well, I do think there are writers who are anti-Colangelo, but I think it's more pro process. I'm pretty much, other than the way they've handled the injury thing, I can't really complain about anything that Brian Colangelo has done. I mean, he's handled things pretty much how I would have wanted a GM to handle them, in terms of the draft picks he's made, the signings he did. They were all short-term, kind of stopgap until they can attract better players. And he hasn't made a bad trade, even though at the same time he hasn't made a trade, so that might be reducing value. But I think he's pretty much handled things how I would have expected or wanted. I don't know. I think go ahead.
You know, like, I think he's lucky that you can't it up at this point. Like, again,
oh well, he came into a great. I mean, it's a much better situation than the other job he was reportedly going for, which is the Nets, who were like, I mean, I guess you can't mess that up because nobody has any expectations for, you know, Marks.
And because they weren't actually trying to hire him, but
yeah,
there's that.
I think it's a pretty idiot proof situation. But
well, you hope, right? I mean, what if it's not? But if it's not, then none of this matters anyways. Yeah.
I guess I should say that as much as I like Sam Hinkie and really respected the job he did, and you know, I worked for the team for 4 years, two of which overlap with Hinkie, and you know, talk to him personally and like him as a person. I don't think he's some sort of genius. Like, I don't think the pro process people, I think it sort of gets conflated, and it's sort of a fun, like, sort of sarcastic thing that they pretend like Sam Hinkie is like literally a god. But I don't think that's what people think. I don't think people think, oh, Sam.
Oh,
Hinkie's...
so you're not actually in a cult?
No. Well, sort of. Well, I did say that in that story I wrote. But I think it's a cult of the process. It's more of a devotion to doing things logically, and Sam Hinkie just kind of embodied that. But I don't think Sam Hinkie, the talent evaluator, I do think he did a really good job of trades. But if you take Sam Hinkie's entire package and put him together, I don't think he's some like transcendent executive. I just think that the plan he had was excellent, and we're seeing that pan out. So I think it's, I think it kind of got conflated with like this praise of Hinkie or this like devotion to Hinkie, whereas really it was just, hey, we really like this plan. As a Sixers fan through a lot of mediocre years, we've been calling for them to, you know, embrace a rebuild for a long time. And now we have this guy who's willing and has the audacity to just like completely plunge the team into embarrassment to get them to that point. So I think it was,
yeah, but
that.
But even then, like, you know, it's like, you know, to like really be the messiah of like the process, like the logic messiah, then like Julia Okafor wouldn't have ever happened, because I mean, I don't love the way that the Colangelos have handled, like, I mean, they probably should have traded Jahlil a while ago, but the reason he's on the team in the first place is because either A, Hinkie decided to get him, which is a failure and like sort of tears apart the you know, idea that he's perfect, which I get is sarcastic, but you know, or he didn't want him and he wasn't brave enough to say like, no, I will resign if you do this. Of course, he eventually was like, I've had enough of this. And a lot of people would have never done that. And that's worthy of praise, but it's the difference between like someone who's really smart and really brave, although maybe brave isn't the right word, as opposed to like so smart and brave that they are literally Jesus.
Yeah. Well, I guess here's what I'll say about the Okafor thing. Obviously that was a really bad pick, and I'm not in the camp that I think there is a camp that exists that says Sam Hinkie. And this is, I think, the portion of the process fan base that really does think Sam Hinkie's a god, says that he wanted Porzingis, ownership told him no and forced him to take Julia Okafor. I think there's a lot of gray area. I do think there was pressure to not take a guy, and even Phil Jackson, who ended up selecting him in the Knicks, probably thought this was going to be like a 3 or 4 year process of getting Porzingis to a point where he was an actual contributor to an NBA team. And it just, somehow he turned one of his biggest weaknesses, which is rebounding, into a strength, and every part of his game got better like overnight. With talking about Porzingis, you know, I don't.
It's
think,
because of the culture.
It's the culture at the Knicks. Yeah, it's really, really positive. But you know, so obviously the Okafor pick was bad. But I don't think that Sam Hinkie thought Porzingis was going to be Porzingis. Wanted to take him, and ownership told him, no, you have to take Okafor. I think it was much more gray area. Maybe he was higher on Porzingis than ownership was, but even Sam Hinkie thought that it was going to take longer. He didn't think they had that kind of, you know, because Embiid was out for a second straight year, because they traded MCW, because everything had been moved back, they didn't think they could take yet another, and Saric, which they expected, but Saric hadn't come over yet. Like, I think taking another guy that was going to be pushed off into the future maybe was less tenable, even for Hinkie. And I think, I don't think if you asked Sam Hinkie 2 years ago, he thought Kristaps Porzingis was going to be what he ended up being. So I think, So I don't buy into the narrative of like, oh, ownership like cucked him and he, you know, took away the guy he wanted. Like, I don't think that's accurate. I think he made a mistake. I think he probably thought, my guess is he thought Okafor is one of the highly touted guys in this class. Even like a month before the draft, the Timberwolves were talking about maybe taking him first overall because Flip Saunders wanted him for whatever reason. And he probably thought, look, we'll take him, we'll play him a little, maybe we'll make a trade right away. Like, maybe there's a team lower than us that'll want to, you know, throw us a nice deal that we'll take right on the spot. And if not, we'll play him for a little while, and maybe the next deadline or next summer we'll trade him. I don't think they imagined that Okafor would come in and be so dreadful that they couldn't move him. So I think it a bad pick, but I think that it was just that. It was just a bad pick in a lot of ways.
Well, I don't think that it's my impression that it's like, it's not that he's like worse than we could have possibly imagined. I think that this was within the range of realistic outcomes. It's just, it's the worst possible outcome that is realistic.
Yeah.
Is
that, I agree with that.
Yeah. Because I mean, we saw flashes of him, like, you know, sort of jogging like a 60-year-old back on defense, like in college, like winning a national championship. So, I mean, that was,
I agree.
In some aspects, it's not stunning.
Yeah. But I think it's fair, or I think it's important to I guess put it into context. Like, I mean, what team, what GM, other than Presti for a very short period of time, just hits on every pick? It just doesn't happen. And I'm not making excuses for Sam Hinkie, but I think a lot of people point to Okafor and say, hey, this is why the process failed or why Hinkie failed or whatever. It's like, look around the league. I mean, look at Danny Ainge's recent draft history. Look at, I mean, really any team. I don't know. I think I don't think Sam Hinkie came in and said, I'm going to get us high picks and I'm going to hit on every single one of them. It would have been unreasonable for him to think that. And I don't think he thought that. I think it was just giving yourself enough shots at the top that you end up with an Embiid or you end up with a Simmons or hopefully both. Or maybe the ping pong balls had gone right and they would have gotten Karl Towns instead of Okafor. So it's that's the process, not Hinkie.
Yeah, it would have been I think that we agree completely. Like I think that like the critical thing to like realize is that what's cool about Hinkie is that he did do all of this stuff to an extent that no one else was willing to do before, but it's not like he did it flawlessly and it's not like no one has done it before. So it's not like he's a genius or it's not like he's like a super genius like Jimmy Neutron, like Brain Blast, and it's not like he's like literally the Messiah dying for our sins. It's just like he probably lost his job, so because he didn't make some win now moves, and he was more willing to put all that on the line, and then was, I mean,
he was phenomenally unlucky, I will say. With the way the ping pong balls went and Embiid's injury, the way Embiid, yeah, and not just picking an injured player, but the Embiid injury before the draft. Like if that hadn't happened, they would have drafted Andrew Wiggins, and I think he'd still be here.
Yeah, it's hard for me. It's hard for me to evaluate with like a 3-year sample size, especially with someone who came who doesn't have a background in sports, like how good of a drafter he is and how much was situational, you know what I mean? When you were saying like which franchises actually hit on every pick, I mean like the Spurs and the Patriots and that's it. And like they've done it consistently that like you can basically conclusively say they do it better than everyone else.
But at the same are those two teams drafting better or are they just the thing we were talking about earlier, which is like the Kawhi Leonard effect. Like if Kawhi Leonard gets drafted by another team, is he exactly that? Or is it that the Spurs can turn Kyle Anderson into a really nice player because he's playing alongside 3 Hall of Famers and for the best coach, maybe in NBA history.
Wait, are you trying to say that if the Patriots had drafted DeMarcus Cousins, he would have just won a Super Bowl?
Something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's
an interesting
thought.
Nice left tackle, probably.
I'm sorry.
I said he'd probably be a pretty nice left tackle, DeMarcus.
Oh, I was seeing him as like quarterback. I was sort of replacing him like with Tom Brady.
Oh yeah.
Like,
okay.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah. That's how I saw it in my head. Here's the problem with having podcasts about the 76ers, and I think that you know that. Like, I have these like really nice, well laid out notes. Of course, I read that excerpt at the beginning, and that's a big part of the start. So, but then I have all these bullet points, and we maybe like touched on half of them because, like, yeah, man, like at the very least, it's like that. Ancient curse or whatever, like you shall live in interesting times, right? Mm-hmm. Like that, at the very least there's that aspect of it, because there's always something to talk about. And I gotta have you back on so we can finish the rest of this, but it's an hour and 10 minutes so far, and I think people can't stand my voice after this long, so are you good to like reconvene?
Is that
a possibility? Well, hey, this podcast was everything I thought it would be and more. So, Max Rappaport, you know him and you love him. Have you ever gotten that before?
I think that's like a common, like when you're not really thinking about what you're saying, I feel like you might say that. So I've probably gotten that accidentally, unintentionally before.
I'm very deliberate, so I don't say that lightly. And I really do Love non-ironically, me. Not sarcastically appreciate you coming on the show and talking with me. So I shouted out optionalities, which is makes so much more sense. And then you mentioned that you write for Complex Sports and Liberty Ballers. Is there anything else you want to talk about? Go check out the Step Over Pod, which is one of an incredibly short list of good Sixers podcasts. It's a saturated market, and the Step Over is a shining beacon of hope amongst a wide and vast chasm of crappy Sixers podcasts. So go check it out.
Thank you.
Is there anything else I'm missing?
No, that's it. I mean, if you want to find the t-shirts or anything I write, probably the easiest way is my Twitter account. It's at Max Rappaport. Last name's RAPPAPORT. My avatar is the This Is Fine dog with the Sixers hat, so you can find me that way. And then everything's just in my bio, all the things I do, the t-shirts, the websites, whatever, podcasts.
Yeah, definitely go follow him and follow at Optionalities, which makes a lot of sense, and at Max Rappaport. Listen to him talk, read him when he writes, and continue trusting the process. Thanks a lot, Max. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Talk to you later.